From the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the University of Missouri, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. We're going to talk today about a country in total political turmoil. And no, we're not going to discuss Donald Trump or the U.S. Congress. Instead, we're going to talk about Guatemala, where the political upheaval has been even greater than in the United States. Central America's most populous nation has been rocked by a massive corruption scandal in recent months. The scandal, known as La Línea, has led to charges against Guatemala's recently resigned president, Otto Pérez Molina, former vice president, Roxana Baldetti, and dozens of others. We'll talk more about this corruption investigation in a bit, but for now, the important thing to know is that it has totally discredited the country's political establishment ahead of Sunday's presidential runoff election. As you might expect, the scandal has left Guatemalans looking for change, and no joke, lots of them are supporting a former comedian named Jimmy Morales, an outsider who has opened up a significant lead in opinion polls. His opponent, a former first lady named Sandra Torres, has been hurt by, naturally, corruption allegations. All this comes in a country still struggling to emerge from the shadow of military rule and conflict during the Cold War, when as many as 200,000 people were killed. Here to talk about the background that's led to this big upheaval in Guatemalan politics is Helen Mack Chang in Guatemala City. She's a Guatemalan human rights activist who started the Myrna Mack Foundation, an organization named after Helen's sister, who was killed in 1990 by a military death squad. Helen Mack Chang, welcome to Global Journalist. Thanks for joining us. You spent something like 14 years pressing the case against suspects in your sister's murder through the Guatemalan courts and eventually all the way to the Inter-American Court on Human Rights in Costa Rica. Give us just a sense as to why it's been so difficult in the past to prosecute former government officials in Guatemala.
Yeah, well, it's because there is no judicial independence, and that's why my sister's case was like the spearhead of all the human rights cases. But me, as a citizen, as a medium class, that I have a university degree, was hard to have access to justice. And the reason of why my sister was killed is because all of the people in the rural areas, which they don't have any access to justice. And especially because there was an alliance in 1954 with the counter-revolution of the military, the political, and the economic sector. And those are the ones who have kept or keep the all the institutions co-opted. And overall, after the peace accords, many of this democratic system has been deteriorating in more corruption. And with that is the justice system, because they want to keep impunity, not only for the human rights.
So what happened then is, after the peace accords in the 1990s, you're saying that the justice system deteriorated and became corrupt, essentially. Now, your sister, she was an activist who spoke out for indigenous Mayan people. Is that correct?
My sister was killed because she was doing research on displaced people. And for the army, that was very dangerous because they didn't want to recognize that we were having an internal conflict. They didn't want the peace process. And that's why all the referendum, we lost the referendum in 1996 or 1997.
This was a referendum over the peace accords, correct?
Right, right. And that's why many of the issues that we are putting on the table are just the same of the 1996 peace accords.
And ultimately, who was convicted in your sister's killing?
From three of them, one colonel, and he flew with the support of the army. And up to today, we are still prosecuting to the policemen who did the killing of the police, who did the investigation of my sister's case.
So it was the security forces, in other words, then?
Yes, it was a covert operation, and that's why it was so hard, because was the intelligence system, the intelligence people, and most of them are the ones that were with this government, but the worst with the Jimmy Morales. For example, one of the members who is supporting Jimmy Morales is Cesar Augusto Cabrera Mejia, who was the director of the intelligence system.
Well, wait, before we get to this election, Jimmy Morales is the front runner. I want to ask you, so why is it that there has been a former president, a former vice president, and so many top officials in Guatemala who have been prosecuted now, if cases like your sister's took more than a decade to come to a conclusion?
Well, because of our lessons learned For example, I was witness of how these structures of intelligence were starting to corrupt. And so that's why we start promoting the International Commission Against Impunity in Guatemala. And
this is a body that was formed by the United Nations, is that correct?
United Nations. Yes, correct. And the idea was to have talking about the independence of judges and prosecutors. And for us, the solution was to have a body that could have investigations with independence. And that's what the way to move out of understanding how investigations, when you are independent, you can, if you have political will, impunity can come down. And that's what happened with the case of La Línea, that was not possible only to get to the medium directors, but went up to the president, to the vice president. And because corruption has been, the politicians have been so cynical about corruption that nobody was believing in this system.
So in other words, then, the problem of impunity was so bad in Guatemala with respect to corruption of government officials that they felt like they had to bring in this outside body appointed by the United Nations to investigate some of these problems.
Correct. That is correct. And the idea was strengthening the system and working with them shoulder to shoulder and not having only advisory with the United Nations, because we have had these experiences before and nothing happened because there is no linkage. There is no coercion with the recommendations of the international institutions with the governmental system. And that's why 25 years after, the judicial system hasn't have had a structural change, and that's what we're asking for now.
And so is having an international body come in and investigate corruption and misdoing by Guatemalan officials, is that something that's sustainable going forwards?
It is sustainable, but it's not. It's a process, and it's not easy just to have it for... One of the weaknesses of that commission is that is every 2 years we have to renew the mandate. And for example, Otto Perez Molina, the former president, didn't want to renew the mandate until the case of the Línea came out, and he had no choice to renew the mandate because they knew that TC was investigating a case of La Línea in which they were involved.
Helen Mack Chang, thanks for joining us. You're listening to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. Now, to broaden our discussion on Guatemala's upcoming election and its struggle to root out endemic corruption, we're joined by three other guests. Joining us from Guatemala City is Luis Barrio Eto. He's a political columnist for the news site El Diario Digital. Also in Guatemala City is Michael McDonald, a Central America correspondent for Bloomberg News. And from Millersville, Pennsylvania, we're joined by Orlando Perez, an associate dean at Millersville University, who has researched the role of the military in Guatemalan politics. Welcome to all of you. Luis Barrueta, tell our audience a bit about this giant scandal known as La Línea. How did this scheme operate? What do we know about how these top officials were involved?
This was essentially a tax fraud scheme. And just to give you a little bit of context, ever since the 1980s in particular, the military got a hold of the control of the customs in the country. And because there's a very complicated tariff system in the country, there's a lot of discretionality in regards to what tariffs may apply in different cases. So this became a multi-million dollar scheme whereby... basically, businessmen were forced to pay bribes in exchange for getting permission to move in their products more easily, and politicians could derive a lot of money in bribes from it. The problem with this was that it involved very high officials within the Superintendency of Tax Administration, which is basically the tax collating agency. And because this is a very high institution within the country, this also ended up involving leading officials such as the vice president, the former vice president, and the former president.
And the former president will go on trial later this year. Is that correct?
Yes, they were all under investigation by the UN sponsored commission for against impunity, and this is why the case was brought to light in mid-April. But there's been more recent findings that have connected other members in the government.
And Mike McDonald of Bloomberg News, tell us just a bit about the popular protests in Guatemala City this summer and about Jimmy Morales. How did he come to be the front runner?
Sure. Jimmy Morales sort of rode a wave of voter discontent with corruption earlier this year in April when the initial case broke with accusations against the vice president's top aide. Protests erupted in Guatemala City against the vice president, against the president, and against government corruption in general. And that was sort of when Jimmy Morales started to rise in the polls. He's a political outsider. He's not from the political establishment. He's a comedian who had a Sunday comedy show. It was a series of skits. He's written with his brother and starred in a couple of movies, low budget films in Guatemala. And he's never held political office. He ran for mayor once of a town, a suburb of Guatemala City, and he was unsuccessful. That was in 2011. And he positioned himself in the campaign as an outsider and under the slogan, neither corrupt nor a thief. And I think he was able to capitalize on the discontent that a lot of people have with the political establishment.
Orlando Perez in Pennsylvania, tell us a bit about Sandra Torres. What was her background? How did she come to be where she is now?
Well, thank you for the invitation. Sandra Torres was the wife, the first lady, and the wife of former President Alvaro Colom. In 2011, she wanted to succeed her husband and run for president. In order to do that, which the Constitution restricts relatives of the sitting president from running for office and succeeding him, forced the president in an attempt to bypass the constitutional prohibitions. The Supreme Court, to their credit, essentially invalidated that move, so she couldn't run in 2011. She had a significant amount of authority and power, particularly over social programs, social welfare programs, during Alvaro Colom's presidency. Many people thought that she was really the power behind the throne, if you will, behind Alvaro Colom's presidency. She is very strong, or her areas of strength are in the rural areas, in the indigenous areas, where a lot of those social programs that she led as First Lady have had a significant impact. She practices the old politics of patronage and clientelism.
And this is where some of these corruption allegations that are swirling around here stem from.
Absolutely. Her sister in particular and other members of her family have been accused of using the influence of the First Lady and the authority that the First Lady had at the time to enrich themselves through these social welfare programs.
Well, Luis Barrueto, let me ask you again about Jimmy Morales. Now, the opinion polls show that he is the front runner in Sunday's election by a significant margin. What do we know about Morales' party, the National Convergence Front? You heard Helen Mack Chang making reference to the involvement of some former military figures in that. How significant is that?
Well, I think Jimmy Morales is certainly a new face to politics. But when you take into consideration the structure behind him, the people involved in his party, there's certainly a significant amount of people involved in it from the former military. And this is not only a military, as was former President Otto Perez, which was seen as sort of a moderate faction within it, but a more sort of old style of politics from the very heart of the Civil War. This is so because the party was founded by members of this old guard, but it's also the case that it's sponsored by some of them. And in a way, the whole system of the party has not been doing things very differently when it comes to getting the votes for the upcoming election. For example, there is a group of civil patrol people that was used in the 80s to fight against the insurgency in the Civil War. And this was sponsored by the military. But in early 2000s, there was another party that used these people to get support in some of the areas outside of the capital city, where they are not seen as so strongly. And they have of course tried to capitalize on this support base.
So in other words, they used the security forces in the past to help improve their turnout then?
Yes. I mean, this is a sort of paramilitary group that was used in the past.
So Morales is running as an outsider, but in fact, some of the people behind him are sort of consummate insiders and old figures within Guatemalan politics and the military, then, it sounds like.
Yes, that's correct. And it's very worrying indeed, because the fact that he doesn't have a very clear program for government lets you sort of looking for clues within his team of people and the way he sees things as the only guides to how he's going to do things if he's actually going to win. And just as a poll indicated earlier this week, he's leading by around 67% to 32%.
McDonald, you know, it's interesting, the parallels, I can't avoid commenting on them. We do have a former first lady running against a sort of pop culture television figure. It almost sounds like the United States in a way in our current presidential race. What's your take of these two candidates? What are some of the reforms that they've actually proposed? How well positioned are they to really make a difference after this huge corruption scandal?
Sure. Well, you know, corruption has sort of taken center stage in the political debate and in the political campaign. There was a Sid Gallup poll back in August that showed that corruption is the top concern among voters. It surpassed security, which is saying something in a country that has a very high level of homicides. You know, the government plans, Morales' government plan is relatively vague. He's put forth some ideas in some of the debates. He's talked about increasing the budget for the state comptroller's office, which essentially acts as an auditor for public institutions in order to weed out corruption. He's talked about increasing the budget for the attorney general's office in order to crack down on corrupt officials. He's also ran on a platform of making it easier for small and medium businesses to get access to loans in order to grow the economy that way through small and medium businesses. Sandra Torres has sort of put out there, she's also mentioned that she wants to make her social programs more transparent. Like Orlando mentioned earlier, there's been accusations that she used these social programs essentially as a way to buy votes in rural communities. She's proposed creating a registry that would publish the names and make spending through those social programs much more transparent. Corruption is an issue that's taken center stage. There have been some proposals put out there. But I think the sense among voters is that some of these government plans that have been put forth are still relatively vague.
This is Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. This week, a look at the massive political upheaval in Guatemala, where a former comedian is leading opinion polls ahead of Sunday's presidential runoff. Joining us today from Guatemala City are Luis Barueto, a columnist for the news site El Diario Digital, and Michael McDonald of Bloomberg News. We're also joined by Orlando Perez in Millersville, Pennsylvania, where he's an associate dean and researches Latin American politics. A reminder that if you're interested in more Global Journalist content, visit us online at globaljournalist.org. There you can read in-depth articles on international affairs and free press issues and download past episodes from our archive. We're also on social media. You can like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at globaljourn. Orlando Perez, you've done a lot of research on the role of the military in Guatemalan politics. How do you see that's changed over time, and where do you see the role of the generals and military officers in the current election and going forward in Guatemala?
Well, I think the role of the military is quite interesting in Guatemala. I think if you compare the military's politicization and direct role in governing the country that occurred during the Civil War, particularly during the 1980s, and then even into the 1990s leading up to the peace accords, we have come a long way. And the military no longer exercises direct political control of the government, and I think that is a positive move. I think if we look at the military's role during the political crisis that led to the resignation and arrest of the vice president and the president recently, I think in many ways they acted constitutionally, and while I am sure that they had a role behind the scenes, their role seems to have been to protect the constitutional process. They did not remove the president via coup, which has happened in the past. I think you have to divide the military between the institutional that seem to be in charge of the military today, and former military officers, retired military officers, particularly those linked to the intelligence sector. Many of those are behind, as Luis mentioned, behind the candidacy of Jimmy Morales.
And some of these people may have been implicated in some of the atrocities that occurred during the Civil War in the 80s and 90s.
Absolutely. They have been implicated. Many of them, if you look at the archives and the documents in the archives, you will find these names of many of Morales's supporters or founders of the FCN, of his party, implicated in massacres, implicated in human rights abuses, the war.
Well, let me just turn this to Luis Barrueto then, because I want to talk about another topic that's related. We understand that Guatemala is a transit point for Mexican cartels bringing drugs from South America to the U.S. How has that affected life in the country? How does it affect its politics?
Well, in a sense, it's one of the most important issues at this election and in the recent history of Guatemala, because of the different strategies that the U.S. Foreign policy has helped countries like Colombia and Mexico fight against the different drug trafficking businesses. Some of this has been led to basically take place in the northern triangle of Central America, which is Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras. And this has, of course, led to the next development in Guatemalan politics that has been the organized crime networks and some of the drug trafficking cartels being enmeshed with the political system. And this is no surprise, really. I mean, they fund campaigns and they get favors in exchange. They get impunity, of course. There's a lot of talk about whether this can reach up to 25% of the financing of political campaigns, as according to a recent report. And this is, of course, very troubling because there is no clear option as to how any of these candidates is going to do anything against it, really.
Well, Mike McDonald, you heard Luis Barrueto bring up the role of the United States foreign policy and how it affects Guatemala's domestic politics. Tell us just a little bit about U.S.-Guatemalan relations. What are some of the key issues between the two countries right now?
I think the top issues would be drug trafficking. The U.S. is very interested in drug trafficking in not only Guatemala, in Central America. Immigration is also a key issue between the United States and Guatemala. We saw last year there was an influx of unaccompanied child minors that came from Central America, essentially fleeing poverty and violence in their home nations. That's been high on the agenda recently, trying to stem immigration from these countries. The U.S. is also one of the largest funders of the CICIG, which is the Commission Against Impunity in Guatemala, which Helen Mack mentioned earlier, which is the U.N. prosecutor's body here. So the United States is very interested in justice in Guatemala and helping support the justice system and helping boost the CICIG's investigations.
And Orlando Perez, tell us just a little bit about what's been going on generally in Central America. Is the upheaval there, is it happening in isolation, or is there something of a people's movement now? Because we saw that Mike McDonald of Bloomberg News just wrote recently about a very sort of high-level former vice president in Honduras, a businessman who had just been indicted in the United States for money laundering. There have been other Honduran officials who have been put on trial recently for corruption. Is this something of like a Central American spring that's happening?
Well, I wouldn't put it quite that way. I mean, I think what is happening is that given that are so deeply rooted in many of these societies, I think we've reached the point from Guatemala down to Panama where civil society and the population have really seemed to have reached a limit as to how much of this corruption they are willing to accept. And I think there is a significant amount of society fervor in trying to deal with the issue of corruption. There are other issues that countries like Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala are confronting, which are crime and violence. And they're connected. Corruption, crime, and violence are all connected. So all of these countries are undergoing significant changes in terms of civil society mobilization, which I think is very positive. We're still at a point where corruption, violence, crime continue to deeply affect all of these countries in a very negative way. And I'm not sure that civil society alone will improve the situation moving forward.
Well, moving forward, let me get your take on that, Luis Barrueto. Our time does grow short. We have less than a minute left. Where do you see Guatemala being a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now? Are we going to see that there will be a significant change as a result of these massive demonstrations this summer and this election?
I think there's definitely a significant change. Of course, this does not mean that we're going to become very functional democracies overnight, but there's been an awakening in civil society that is pushing for, among others, a reform to structural issues like the electoral system or the civil service legislation that basically rules how basic politics and how the political party system is conformed in the country. So we'll still have to see whether the incoming government is going to address this very high demands among the population. Then, of course, we have the issue about the interested groups that have always been there and how they're going to resist the changes. But at least we have a tool on our side, which is the investigations performed by the attorney general in the country and also by CC, which is injecting a sort of dynamism in this debate because we finally have solid investigations pushing for the investigation of formerly corrupt officials.
We're going to have to leave it there for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the Missouri School of Journalism. Many thanks to Helen Mack Chang, Luis Barrueto, Orlando Perez, and Michael McDonald for joining us. Global Journalist lead producer this week is Javila Roscoe-Skate. Our associate producers are Elenia Kaya, Zhu Hang, and Erjun Peng. Our studio director is Travis McMillan from RJI. Our audio engineer is Pat Akers of KBIA. For all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.